What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Microphone check, 1, 2, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to be talking with Jeremy Dinsmore. Jeremy is the host of the Antler Up podcast that's located right here on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. He's a pleasure to have on, and to be honest with you, the dude hunts similar to how I hunt. And so, you know, it's always good to talk to people like that. It's always good to talk to people who are completely different than you. And really what that does is it just gets you well-rounded in all things hunting gear and equipment. And that's why I have Jeremy on today. Now, topics of conversation today include new releases. I'll just kind of tell the abbreviated version of it right now. I used to be a wrist release guy, had a wrist release. Every single year, felt comfortable with it. Can't find my wrist release this year, so I bought a True Fire thumb release several years ago, and it's been sitting on a filing cabinet in my office, I want to say in the exact same spot for 7 years. And so I ended up picking it up and started using it, and here we go. I kind of like it. And so we talk about that on today's episode. We talk about climbing methods. We talk about saddle hunting. We talk about How to adjust yourself in the saddle. I am going to be using a saddle a lot more this upcoming season. And so I need all the tips, tricks, and tactics that I can. And Jeremy, he's been hunting out of a saddle for quite a while now. And so I pick his brain on that. And really, those are the two main topics in today's podcast. So I'm going to keep the intro short. We got to do a commercial real quick. And that commercial is for Code Blue Scents. And before I forget, I have a discount code for Code Blue, and that is NFC20. And that's going to get you 20% off any purchase from Code Blue Scents website. And here's, you know, obviously they have the scent elimination spray. They have the attraction sticks. They have the attraction type scents. The synthetic scents, the tarsal gland scents, the authentic urine, the real urine scents. And what I am personally looking forward to using the most this year is the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit that that they are going to send me. And so I'm really looking forward to getting some mock scrapes set up, getting those put in to an area where deer live and getting them in front of a trail camera. And so hopefully I'll be able to get more deer in front of my trail camera. And ultimately that's what I want. That's why I use mineral stations in the summer. That's why I put my trail cameras on heavy trails and pinch points. And that's why I'm gonna start experimenting with mock scrapes in order to just get deer in front of my trail camera. And the more deer I get in front of my trail camera, the more deer I'm gonna know their routine, know how they hunt. And if they're a shooter caliber, I'm going to make a move on them. So really looking forward to using Code Blue Scents this upcoming season. So go visit CodeBlueScents.com. And really that's it, man. I it's that time of year where I need to take a day to go set up my trail cameras. I'm behind. I should have had them done in June. It's August. I'm actually getting ready to go to Florida for a week. And I still have a whole bunch of stuff to do before, heck, October 1st shows up. And I want my trail cameras out at least soaking all of September, all of October. So then when it's time to start making moves, I have the more data, the better. Yeah, the most up-to-date real-time data. So that's it. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Enjoy the show. And, if you like the Hunting Gear podcast, go to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast and leave a 5-star review and share it with your friends. So thanks again for taking time out of your day to listen. Enjoy this episode. 3, 2, 1. All right. I'm on the Hunting Gear, obviously. Every once in a while I'll just get really tongue-tied. I've done so many of these and usually they go pretty seamless, but just now I had a little bit of a tongue-tie moment, and I just like have an immediate brain fart, and then I don't take notes, so then I have to stop a second and I gotta go, okay, what podcast is this, what am I gonna talk about, and then just redo it in my brain. And so Mr. Jeremy Dinsmore of the Antler Up podcast here on the Sportsman's Empire podcast is on the Hunting Gear podcast today. So thank you very much for making time to do this, man.
Dude, anytime. When you mentioned gear, I'm all for it, man. So let's dive into some fun topics. Mm-hmm.
Well, before we do that, how has your summer been in Pennsylvania?
Summer's been pretty good. Have been doing a lot of things on the honey-do list, hanging out with my wife, my daughter. Mm-hmm. So that way I'm able to, you know, like I mentioned on the Nine Finger Chronicle episode last week, have a variety of different hunts lined up, so to hopefully allow me to sneak away here and there on some quick little trips and do all that stuff. So, but I've been did a lot of postseason scouting kind of in that February, March, April time frame, and then June I did a little bit more so back at home in northeastern Pennsylvania, where I grew up hunting, where I still do a majority of my hunting in Pennsylvania. But what I'm doing now is all the public land where I live that I scouted in February, March, and April, I'm going back to those spots now to place cameras and see what they kind of will hold for me come fall.
How many trail cameras do you have out right now?
Right now I have half of mine, which is about 15, and I have another 15 that I still need to deploy.
So you have 15 trail cameras out. Now I want you to ask me that same question.
How many trail cameras do you have out right now, Dan?
Zero. I have zero. Dude, I feel so behind right now. And this summer is ridiculous, and I don't want to make excuses, because I'm sure there's always time to get out and do stuff. The issue that I run right. into is I got one farm that's an hour and a half away. I got another farm that's 3 hours away. And so, like, it's really hard to just quick buzz down there and go get them. And I mentioned in earlier episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles, I lost the farm that was close to my house. So it's not real quick anymore. It's not, hey, let's just go do something. So now I got to take full days to go do something. And my goal is this upcoming Sunday, leave real early in the morning and come back real late at night. And hopefully, if not, maybe spend the night somewhere. And knock it out and try to knock some of this stuff out quickly.
Yeah. I think too, I know how you feel, and in the sense of saying you feel behind. I mean, I have friends that were like me that have 30 cameras or whatever it is, but they have yet to put any out and won't, they're changing their strategy not till September when that deer shift kind of happens. Mm-hmm. Where for me, like I said earlier, with the 15 that are already out, Dan, about 10 of those have been out all year. They're like 10 soakers. So, I mean, I've thrown only a little bit. And my thought process is that the 15 that I still have to put out, a couple of those I'm going to put in areas that I actually had them out last year for all year that I really didn't hunt. So I'm just kind of, I'm basically fine tuning those with a fine comb. And then if I find a couple good, really good scrapes, and I found the scrape that I want to hang mine on that's close to bedding, close to that food, and kind of checks off all the boxes, then that's when I'll throw that, like, a new one up, basically.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. I was paying for all of these cell cams, and it was about February or March when I just was like, I disconnected all of them, I disconnect them. I just put the plan on pause. I'm not getting charged for them.
Yep.
So I was running a lot of cameras, and there was no pictures, nothing. I mean, there was just a bunch of really small deer coming through, or does and fawns, or nothing at all. Grass, to be honest with you. And so I'm looking to start turning all that stuff back on and start collecting data again.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, real quick, before we dive into another topic, you had me rolling yesterday, because I was working out and I was listening to the episode that you did with Mark, where it was the whole go back to listen to episode one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. On the, you were listening to the Wired to Hunt podcast. Wired to Hunt. Yep.
Yep. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was listening to the Wired to Hunt podcast that you did with him recently, where you talked about it, that it's been 10 years since the podcast, 15 since Mark started Wired to Hunt, all that stuff.
Yep.
And the part when you go, yeah, real small buck, that 130, and Mark cut you off, and Mark goes, Dan, there's so many Michigan hunters. And I'm thinking, Michigan hunters won. I'm like, just PA guys are probably like, this friggin' asshole. I was cracking up just while I was working out. I thought that was good. I couldn't wait to tell you that.
I'll tell you this, man. I when I started hunting, right, all of my information came. Like when I first started getting serious into this, like 2006, is when I like kind of jumped back into it. But I mean, everything before that, I was reading North American Whitetail. I was reading, Outdoor Life and, Field and Stream. Those were the three magazines. I didn't watch a lot of videos, until a little bit later on, when you would get like Realtree Monster Bucks. Or what were some of the other old VHS tapes?
I mean, the Realtree Monster Bucks one, the ones with Dale Earnhardt Jr. Dale Earnhardt, and all those ones back in the day.
Yep. And so Monster Bucks and then Realtree Road Trips and things like that that were on VHS tapes. And so I thought every state was equal, like big bucks were equally distributed across all states.
So did I, yeah.
Until I started doing the content part of this, and I start meeting people from Michigan and Pennsylvania and New York and Alabama and whatnot. And then you realize, you know, so when I start talking to them about, you know, passing 130-inch, you know, three-year-olds, their minds are blown, and they're just like, what are you talking about? So yeah. There's this whole, like, you have, like, there's no such thing as a four-year-old in your state. And I'm over here, like, taking all this for granted because everything I've ever seen anywhere was only about focused on giant racked antlers. So I thought giant racks were just equally distributed all over the U.S. And so there was a big, like, a multiple years where you're getting educated because you're having conversations with other people about, dude, I'm shooting 130-inch whatever age it is every single year it walks by me in my state.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was just so funny just the way that the conversation went, and I'm like, I just loved it.
Yeah. Have you changed up? Let's flip to the gear talk now. Have you changed up any equipment recently?
Yeah, so one of the main things is I've talked about it on my podcast, and I did a podcast with the guys from Exodus last year with Cam for his kind of like gear podcast. We talked about releases when it comes to obviously your shooting style. Yeah. And, you know, growing up, just like anybody else, I had that index finger. And to kind of give you – to paint the big picture here, Dan, like you were just saying, I would say about – 5 years ago, up until that point, I shot really great. I was extremely confident in my ability. Like if you were like, hey, Jeremy, let's do that. Like I wouldn't get nervous, right? I didn't have that feel until I dove down the rabbit hole of like, wow, this is like any other sport where it's very technique driven. Mm-hmm. And cause I just shot, right? And I shot really, really well and really confident. So then once I dove into that, it messed me up so bad. Like it was like the worst thing I could have ever done to myself because I started developing that target panic and other things and really focusing on my form. And then I wouldn't say but the thing about the target panic was I did not know I developed it, if that makes sense. Because I was still shooting like okay. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, I need to shoot a thumb button because John Dudley says this is like the best way to do it. You know what I mean? So I went down that rabbit hole. I shot that and it was terrible. Like there's a video that I should actually like take down from years ago, but I'm like this in the camera. And then you just see me go whack.
Oh like, yeah. Yeah. Punching just, it. Yep.
Just smash it with my thumb. And I just say to myself, what in the heck is that? And then I worked through things, went to the index again, worked through that. And the last year, I actually used one of the Carter back tension index style releases, and it helped me out tremendously where that whole year last year, I went through the process of like, if this is the trigger, I'm wrapping my full finger on there. And I know it's not going to go off until I really engage my back muscles slash like pull through. So since then, I've always really enjoyed that thumb button anchor point, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the last a little bit tinkering through this winter months this and all spring and all summer, I've now shooting the UltraView button, but I feel tremendous with my ability right now and my headspace. So I'm back to shooting a thumb button like solely for this upcoming year.
Yeah. Yeah. this is gonna sound really weird, but I was looking around. Okay, so here's the full story. This is my third year with this bow. I got a Bowtech Solution, and it's my third year with it. Strings were getting pretty raggedy, so I bought an AAB. Right? Is that the name of the?
Yep. America's Best Bow Strings. ABB.
Yep.
What is natural? When you read natural flavors on a label, most people don't realize it's often not real food at all. Those hidden ingredients quietly work against how your body feels and functions over time. That's why Just Ingredients uses only real food ingredients, so you know exactly what you're putting in your body. Stop guessing. Start knowing at justingredients.us.
So I bought a ABB. This time I add a little color to it. First time I've ever had color on a string. So it's red and black. It matches my bow real nice because I got a gray bow. And then on those Bowtechs, they have like these little red, the lock systems that you can tinker with for adjustments. And so my bow looks kick. I mean, just looks kick ass now. Anyway, so I get my bow set up and I can't find my wrist release from last year. I'm looking everywhere for it and I can't find it. So I'm like, I want to shoot my bow. So I picked up this thumb release that I had. It's a True Fire. And I started shooting with a thumb release. And I'll tell you, even to go back a little bit further, it was this will be three years with it. But 3 years ago, I went into a shop and I was drawing my bow back, and he goes, what size are you? I said, I'm a 29. And I start drawing back. And he goes, no, dude, you're short. You're a 30. And so, I've started shooting 30 inch draw, and it's made life a little bit easier for me, to be honest with you. I feel more comfortable at full draw. The draw itself is smoother. I don't feel like I'm,
crunched
at full draw. You know, there's sometimes if you're short, your body wants to go back further, but it's at max capacity, and so you can't. I mean, I just felt like I was holding it. Now I can actually enjoy the let off a little bit more and just relax at full draw. And so, like, that combined with this new thumb draw or the thumb release that I'm using, I'm liking it. I'm not 100% there yet, but by the end of this summer, man, I'm gonna be like, I pulled up last night at 60, and I mean, I was hitting a paper plate at 60 yards, and I haven't even fine-tuned everything yet. So I'm really looking forward to the next couple weeks to really start fine-tuning my bow, getting really comfortable with that thumb release. But I feel like I almost have a benefit from having a missing finger. And I when I'm at full draw, I can put that nub, the nub of my finger, right into my chin, like the back of my chin, and like put my thumb or up my thumb when I go to squeeze it right underneath of my chin right here. And it sets in there so perfect. And then I just squeeze, and it just makes everything, I don't know, just everything feels a little bit more comfortable. And I'm shooting darts, man. I like it so far.
Yeah, that's great. Let me show you, because I have it right here. So what I did, one of the things, and I think it's kind of really important to talk about, is your placement of your thumb while it's on the trigger. So I went to an archery shop one time, and the individual that was working there that owns the shop, he's a really great shot. So he was helping me out. This was when I was shooting a thumb button. Mm-hmm. And I knew if I ever went back to it, so I was getting away from it basically at that point in time, just because of my technique was horrendous. And what I was doing then was, obviously, I was just smashing, right? I couldn't feel comfortable putting my thumb on it without knowing that it's not going to go off.
Right.
And what he showed me is, now when I run my barrel, I don't run it fully out. I run it kind of really in. And what that's allowing me to do is feel comfortable. I have it kind of in that, like that divot right in my finger. So it's far back. Now you've seen people where they clasp their two fingers and their thumb. I was doing that, and I felt totally comfortable doing it where it was deep in the throat of my hand there. And I would pull. The thing that I noticed though is, if I wasn't really consistent with my pull through, mm-hmm. and my accuracy was kind of pretty crappy. So what I since have gone to is, like I just said, I don't touch, but I just have it as deep as I can. And once I'm there, as I pull it, like kind of, what I end up doing is engaging my pinky that causes that to like go off basically then, because it's my whole hand compressing. And that has been tremendous with that longer range accuracy for me. So that's just, I don't know, I just think of where you place that barrel, or whether it's a big one, a thin one, I think that is a really critical component of that, because if you're not consistent with that, your shot will not be consistent.
My trigger's also in like yours.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily do the pullback though. I do the hand squeeze. So from,
Yep. Because I've talked to Nate Sellers from Average Jack Archery. His shop is literally 2 minutes from my house, and we really converse a lot, and he's a great shot. He shot in the Lancaster Archery. He does all a bunch of 3D different things, indoor stuff. And, you know, what I liked about what he was saying when he was showing me more so of like just engaging your hand, like your whole hand instead of just your thumb. And he made a video. It's a trigger. So it needs to be... And it's somehow it needs to be pressed.
Yeah.
Right. Like we talk about all this back prep tension and pulling through, like you're going to have that because of, even if you squeeze it. Now, if you're just here and smashing it, it's not going to move back, but it was just interesting to hear someone that competes basically and saying it's a trigger. It's not. So it does need to be compressed and needs to be pushed basically.
Yeah. Funny
squeezed.
Funny story, I was in Shields testing out bows and thumb releases. Well, it was my own bow. I brought it in there, and I don't know what happened. I must have let go of the thumb release as I was drawing. So I was at full draw, and I don't know what happened. This is like one of the first five shots out of a thumb release, and my hand just went like this. It opened up. The thumb release went into the bow, bounced back, hit me in the cheek, and I had to go to the hospital and get I didn't have to get any stitches, I don't think, but I had to get butterfly sutures across my face.
No way.
Yep, because it bounced back off the bow and hit me in the face.
Oh, man.
You know, like... I've been shooting bows for so long. I felt just like a rookie. I felt embarrassed. Like all these people are like, dude, don't you have a podcast where you talk to people about hunting and bow hunting specifically? I just felt like a douche, man.
They're like, this freaking guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
You go ahead. I was going to say the other thing that that will be new to me is I'm not one sticking. I'm still using three sticks with an aider. However, what I noticed last year with an aider, which for me, I'm a short individual. I'm only 5'7", so I need that to get to certain heights. Like I know you could only hunt one stick off the ground. Like I understand all that stuff, and I get that. But for majority of my hunts, I usually am 15 to 20 feet. And with an aider coming down, regardless if it's light out or dark out, it's just a really natural, uncomfortable thing to do. And I know there's hundreds, thousands of people that could do it with their eyes closed. Climbing up, I feel really good. I have no issues with it climbing up. Coming down, though, is where the issue kind of comes about. So what I'm doing this year is I'm still using my three sticks with an aider, but I'm going to rappel down the tree this year. So basically, once I get to that first stick, I'll kind of come off to the side, I'll undo it, you know, lower it to the ground, rappel down to that next stick to the next stick, and then obviously to the ground, and then I'll bring it, you know, bring it out of the woods with me that way.
Man, there's so many like ways to climb a tree. I know a guy who hunts, he hunts in his backyard, and he lives in like a bow hunt, like one of those rural bow hunting areas, which he has a tree stand, but then he goes to like state parks and he has a traditional bow and he takes part in one of those, like it's basically an overpopulation hunt where you shoot a handful of, you can shoot does in there basically. And he takes part in that. And he does the method where it's a sack and on the end of this string is a weighted beanbag. And he'll throw the beanbag up in the tree, and it'll come down. And then he pulls a rope up in it. He'll pull that down, that thin rope's attached to a climbing rope. And then He'll get that somehow situated, and then he'll be able, he climbs the tree with just a rope somehow, on his feet and on his hands. It's like, it's like a toggle, where you, it just goes click, 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 and then you pull yourself up, click, 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 and it pulls yourself, almost like a ratchet strap type deal. And then he'll get up there and he'll set his platform up in his saddle, and that's how he does it. No sticks. And so I'm just like, man, that just seems, that's awesome, because everything he has can fit into the palm of his hand. But I don't know, man. I'm a pretty big dude, and I feel like if I was to try something like that and it was windy, I would just be like, you ever seen one of those, the San Francisco Bridge when it's real windy and it starts to wave? I would feel like that.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I want to make the Batman grappling launcher. Just be like, let it go, let it hook around, and just pull myself up.
Yep, and 200 pounds gets pulled right up the tree somehow off his belt.
Yeah,
yeah, the utility belt.
I would be dumb. I'd be so dumb where I would pick the tree branch that would just, as soon as I would pull up, it would just break.
Break.
That,
yep.
Like I just.
Yep.
Yeah. Like I would have no. I would just be. It would be like dark out and. I'd be like, oh, there's the perfect spot. There goes the tree branch.
Yeah. But. So right now, I have a pair of tethered sticks that I'll be using, but here's where, I don't know if I've told anybody this story. I might have, but I put an order in for, it was 20 climbing sticks. All right. I ordered four old Lone Wolf stands. This was several years ago, and 20 sticks because, it was five stands, 20 sticks, and that's four sticks for each stand. And so I ended up getting, in the order, I paid for 20 sticks, but they sent 20 sets of four. And because I, at the same time, Lone Wolf got turned into Novex. So everything that I had was Lone Wolf branded. And so when I went, hey, you guys sent me 20, and they're like, just keep them. Right.
Wow.
So I still have like seven unopened boxes of sticks in my garage that, I mean, I'll eventually use them over time, but what I'm going to do is like, I literally, if I find a good spot, I just go set sticks there and put a tree stand up. But when I leave the sticks there and I just take the stand down with me. Now in public, I'm taking everything down. But on that little piece of property, man, I'm just like, holy smokes. I mean, I have all these sticks. So anyway, my run and gun setup is Lone Wolf sticks just because I have so many of them. And then I wrap them in hockey tape. Just to deaden them down and to get a better grip on them. And I carry everything into the stand, everything into the woods with me on a bow holder. So I put the bow holder in and I can strap them in and I just throw it over my shoulder. That way, when I get to the tree, I don't have to take my backpack off to get the stands out. I can just start working my way up the tree right away and not have to worry about anything.
That's nice. Yeah. Back at, like I was mentioned earlier, in northeastern Pennsylvania where I hunt a lot, where I grew up, it's private land. And there's a bunch of little spots where I've screwed in the old kind of, you know, screw in step. And I've placed, like what you just said, a ton of older sticks that I've had laying around from growing up. My dad has had, you know, all that stuff. And we don't really have, some have tree stands in them that, like, I don't really use those ones just because those spots are really mainly for him. But there's, I would say, I think I have about three three tree setups where it's just the sticks, and I'll get up, I'll be able to just quickly climb up, say in the morning, and I'll just put on my Predator platform from tethered, tether in basically, and then I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Man. It just makes it that step easier. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think on some of my private ground, usually this is what I have been doing. That I hunt, I have historically good rut spots. So then usually what happens, I'll go in, I'll set one of the good rut spots. And then from there, I'll say, okay, this deer's working this, or I'll check trail cameras and I'll say, hey, this deer's working this little area. And so then I'll go and I'll set up. This year I didn't do it because I tagged out fairly early with my saddle, but earlier in October, I went into the new farm that I had, and I was running and gunning off of one tree stand. So I would go in, I set a tree stand, basically observed, and then when I went to go in for the kill, I'd be in my saddle. And so yeah. I only hunted that way a couple times. But I'll tell you this right now, I'm really looking forward to this new lockdown saddle from Tether.
Yeah, you have the lockdown. I was going to say, yeah. Don't you have the lockdown? Nice. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. And I'm really looking forward to, because the one thing that I like about the lockdown compared to, let's say, a regular saddle is just the pockets. I felt like I was having to dig for something because I didn't run any of those little pouches that came with it. I would put them in my pockets or cargo pants or in my jacket or hoodie pockets. And so then when I would go in, I was like having to dig into them. Well, they're all right there now. Yeah. And so I'm going to be able to unzip, grab, pull my bow up or screw in a hook, hang my bow, screw in my Ozonix, screw in anything that I want. And I feel like I'm going to have to rely less on my backpack and more on the saddle itself, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah. Mine is on the way. I'm really excited to get mine. It's so funny because I have my setup dialed, of course. And then now this new one's going to be coming in, but there's certain aspects of it that I think of my style of hunting that that's the reason why I will transfer over to that. And I'm still going to run my Phantom for certain situations and everything like that.
Yeah.
However, but the way the lockdown, that 5 extra inches of extending, right? That's not a new thing. Like Arrow Hunter made that years ago. The thing that makes the lockdown that so much better is because of a bungee cord basically. So when it's, when it's not in use, it goes right back to that normal shape that it is.
Yeah.
But that extra 5 inches, I'm a sitter. I like being as close to the tree as possible. That's what I found to be tucked in and being able to, I could get away with, I think, more movement that way as well.
Yep.
So with that, that extra 5 inches is, I think, really beneficial. So if anybody that is a saddle hunter that really likes to have their knees into the tree and like be in that sitting position, so they call it, I would really try one of the lockdowns out because I told the guys over at Tethered the first time I sat in it at working a show, I was like, I almost didn't want to try it because I like my setup so much. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I got in it, Dan, and I put my knees into the tree, and I was like, wow, this is comfortable. And Carl goes, use the extend it. And as soon as I did that and I sat down, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's where I was sold right then and there, just because with your setup and when I explain this to people, we have our bows that have, micro adjustable rest, micro adjustable sights. Your saddle is that same thing, right? The number one thing you have to do is obviously have your saddle on correctly, where a lot of people, it's a natural thing, will run it high because we're so used to putting our pants on and our pants are at a certain level, where if you are running the tethered Phantom, so to speak, that the way the shape of it with being a football, it needs to be actually lower on your body. Like it, where your belt loops are, that is at the bottom of your belt loop on your pants is where the top of my saddle is. So like number one, you need to have the saddle on correctly. And then number two, with all the micro adjustability that you have, your tether height, your bridge length, your comfort channels on that. So there's, you are really able to fine tune like your specific setup. And obviously what I might find comfortable, you may not, and vice versa. So that I think is really critical to like now what we're discussing here at the end of July. Like if you are transitioning into the saddle or you ran it last year and you're like, now's the time to just get a foot off the ground and really fine tune your setup, because come fall, you're going to be very thankful that you did, because then you're going to be able to sit those all day sits and not have to worry about, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing. When am I done? And focus on, when's this deer coming and I need to make this shot.
Yeah. What's the, so what you're saying is that it's less about supporting the back and more about getting that, really to cover your butt, your hips, and then your upper legs.
Yeah. So like when you look at it, I mean, obviously there's different body frames and all that type of stuff, but when you have that on correctly, like where I was stating that pressure, you're not really going to feel that in your back. And then that's where like the, depending on where you put your bridge height. So for me, I like mine. I'm right in the middle of the road. I'm either, even with my, like where my tether's tied off at is either right at my nose or right below it basically. And then I usually have a hand length from my, if we're just talking regular tether and rope and not using the rappel rope. So a handful from that and my rope man. And then my bridge tag is usually about a hand length as well. And I could lengthen that too a little bit. And what that does for me, Dan, is I'm comfortably able to lean and without really any pressure on my back or anything along those lines. And then that will also allow me to put my knees into the tree without adjusting my tether height. I'm literally in that fixed position. The only thing that I would need to do is if I want to wrap around the tree from my strong side to shoot to my weak side, where I might drop down to my step to get a little bit more distance. And all I'm going to do then is I like using the rope man just because of fast one hand adjustment. I will just loosen that up, drop it maybe an inch, 2 inches, where I'd be able to maneuver around the tree even more. That's honestly, that's, I try to keep it that kiss it, you know, principle, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And that's what I found really works for me. And if once I hit maybe a 4-hour, 5-hour mark on a hunt, I will grab that back band out just to relieve a little bit of tension if needed. But then in the second I see a deer or anything, I just loosen those up on the side, and that will automatically fall down and it will be in line with my bridge, so it's not in the way whatsoever.
Yeah.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes it, the way you described it made it sound simple. I hope it's as simple as, as simple as it is for me. I will be completely honest here, man. I'm excited to use a saddle, but I am nervous to have a target animal, especially like, let's say I go put my trail cameras out on Sunday. I start getting pictures, you know, when I go check my trail cameras, there's a giant walking around and he stays on the farm. And then, you know, so it's just, I've had, you know, on a tree stand, I feel like you can get around, you can turn around, you can stand up, you can maneuver, you can move your bow over to one side of the tree. That's the thing that I'm going to have to be practicing right now in that saddle is to get around, you know, get around the tree and practice those weak side shots, you know, practice like, you know, rotating away from the tree and things like that. And so, it's just about practice, and I know I'll get it when it's time, but I can't help but think of one position where deer came in, which would have been on my draw side on this pond levee, and I would have to either come over or like swing underneath and come that way, or wrap all the way around and come the other way. So yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, it's all about practice.
It is. And the thing about like what you just said, I guarantee you the first deer, now you've shot, you've killed an animal out of your saddle so far.
No, not yet. Nope, not yet.
Okay. So majority of people, I swear, the first deer they kill, whether it's a doe or a buck, it's always going to be on that weak side shot. Mm-hmm. Like my first deer was, like all my buddies, when they transition to a saddle or whatever, they're like, man, I swear it's always that weak side shot that you kill your first deer on. But so the thing about that, when you have that tree in front of you, so, you know, that's your 12 o'clock, right? I would say from your strong side then is 12, 11, right? 10, 9, 8. Once you get to that 6 o'clock, that's your drop shot. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable being able to swing, like, continuously around to about 4 o'clock. Then, well, like, on that clock face. Then from there, again, like I mentioned, Tether posted the video. It was a reel where I talked about like taking that weak side shot from your strong side. Mm-hmm. Where, so you're a right-handed shooter, right?
Yep.
So I always stick, as a right-handed shooter, your sticks should, like, I don't want to say should because it's not like a rule, but I prefer it on my left side of the platform. Mm-hmm. So then, like I was saying to you earlier, I'm able to drop down, put my foot on that, so an extension of the platform. So then my left knee, so my left knee is on the side of the tree basically. And then now I have that solid base and I could shoot that weak side shot. That's where that 360 really comes into play, like mm-hmm. around the tree. And then, you know, the one thing that I tell people to practice a lot is how to put their backs to the tree. So again, my bow's in my left hand and with my tether, my right hand's in my tether spot. And I just pull myself up and all I'm doing is just putting that, I'm ducking under it. So it goes over my right shoulder. My back's then to the tree. So like once you, like I said to you earlier, just get a foot off the ground and practice those like movements. Like yep. obviously now, because I've done it for so long, like for a couple of years and I practice it a lot, I could do it so quick and easy. But you know, and the number one thing is I always tell when I'm working with individuals for their first time trying it or adjusting it, I just be athletic. Yeah. Right? Like be in an athletic position, move on it. Like don't let the rope dictate where you're going to go. Like you dictate where you're going to go.
Right.
You know, kind of like when you're lifting weights, like you don't let the weight lift you, you lift the weight.
Yeah. What other tips does a guy, and when I say a guy, I say me, need yep. to know before committing to a saddle hunt?
I think it's going to, the practice, I know we just talked about all the, how important practice really is, but I can't stress it enough just because the season that I really transition, I'm telling you, Dan, I practice so much like daily. And I have a buddy, a friend of mine that he's never hunted out of one. He's got squared away with all with his kit right now. And he's practicing every day and he's 5-6 days in practicing. He's like, dude, I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and so I just think the more you practice, the more you're going to be comfortable in it. But the thing is also trust the equipment.
Yeah.
Right. Like you, like if, like I was saying earlier, that drop shot, that 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. like you don't want to be hindered in leaning into your right side. You want to be leaning your left hip into that saddle and just being floating over it and being able to get that shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously, the cool thing about that, if you used to want to practice from an elevated position in a tree stand, you're constantly climbing up and down while you're practicing in the yard shooting. With the saddle, you could get a stick high and really be in your form position. I mean, that was the one thing transitioning for me that I felt was a huge benefit for me, was almost already being in that natural shooting position because of bending at the waist and just being there. So that's the one aspect that I've really have come to go. But I mean, honestly, Dan, the main thing is honestly practice, and it's going to take time. It's not a quick overnight adjustment. It might be, you know, getting like, you go to your spots when it's getting ready here mm-hmm. in Iowa, but those couple times, like maybe get out for a doe hunt somewhere random
yeah.
in October, a couple times just to get used to it and, yep. You know, be ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. You're 100% right. I think October 1, I'll probably just bounce around on some public and, get the ball. I mean, I need to shoot a doe anyway to get some meat in the freezer this year.
Yep.
Cause I'm running low. I mean, I'm almost out of everything. except some deer sticks. But outside of that, outside of that, I need to kill a doe anyway. And I think you're 100% right. Putting myself in the position with some does, I think it's going to be the best thing.
Yeah. Because and also I messed up on a buck the 21 season where I just went full idiot and didn't trust my process of pulling myself and doing that weak side shot where I was trying to go over. Mm-hmm. And like, as I was going over and drawing back and trying to get situated, I accidentally hit the trigger and it like sailed and the deer like ran away. I'm like, okay, well, if I would have just taken my time and did what I was supposed to do in a weak side shot, I would have, you know what I mean? I just got too like excited and too mentally like, oh my gosh, just turn.
Yep.
And I should have just pulled myself up, turn, and it would have been a normal little chip shot. Again, you learn in those moments. And what I said to you last time, I've learned a hell of a lot more from my failures than my successes. And that was one of them.
Yeah, that's a fact. I just don't want that failure to be on a Boone and Crockett.
On a big, yeah. Well, and again, I think the whole getting out a little bit early time,
right,
shoot a doe in situations, that is going to elevate your confidence tremendously. And you're going to feel like, okay, you know, no matter what situation or comes about, I will feel confident that I could get the job done.
Right. Absolutely. Let's see here. I am trying to think about what else I need to change or get ready for the season, but my bow is ready. My arrows are ready. My broadheads are ready. I think from my arrow standpoint, I'm ready to go. My saddle equipment, I mean, I have it. I just need to fine tune it. My gear, I have everything I need for gear. I think I'm good to go for the season. I don't, like, other than maybe a last minute boot purchase. I've been running the same crispy boots now for a very long time, and I think this might be year number 5 on them, and they're still in decent shape. They don't hold the waterproofing anymore, but they're just perfectly broke in, and they're so comfortable. And I don't it usually doesn't rain when I go to South Dakota, and if it rains when I'm in Iowa, it's not a big deal. I'll just wear a different pair of boots. Because, you know, you're just walking to a tree.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm putting on miles and miles out in the Badlands. So, I don't know. Other than a pair of boots, I think I'm set for all my gear this year. How about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm pretty dialed in with everything. I just need to finish, like I said earlier, getting the cameras out and just shooting a little bit more and you know, be ready to go when it's time to come. Like I said earlier, the first hunt for me potentially could be in September in Maryland. So it's just going to be a quick one. It might be just a Friday, Saturday, or potentially even just a Saturday, and go another maybe weekend type of day trip again. Yep. But, you know, we'll be able to test out some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, hey, I tell you what. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with us about gear. Thanks for the insight on saddles, because I have a feeling I'm going to probably be texting you or trying to get you on the phone when I'm up in the tree saying, okay, what about this? How do I overcome this? And so it's always, there's a lot of people here on the network that do saddle hunt. So it's, you know, there's a lot of people I can talk to. But Jeremy, man, I appreciate your time today.
Dan, no problem. Thank you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.